This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Barry Abernathy is a founding member of one of bluegrass music's hottest new acts on the road today, Appalachian Roadshow. And while their future seems bright indeed, Barry had a few songs in his back pocket that he had recorded prior to forming the new band, and it seemed like now was as good a time as any for a new CD release. Barry joins me to talk about his musical career, his new band, and his latest CD, Barry Abernathy and Friends, on this edition of Americana Music Profiles. Hi, Barry. Welcome to the podcast today.
Hey, Greg. Good to be with you. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate getting a chance to talk to you again. We've had a chance to talk a couple times, and Seems like you got all kinds of cool stuff going on, so
I've got plenty of time. To make up cool stuff.
Oh, my gosh. I tell you, I feel like a broken record. We talk about this all the time, but I know as fans and of the music and certainly as artists, I know we're all ready. We're all ready to get back to work, so...
absolutely. We actually got to work a little bit in January. We went to Florida and worked. We actually had a couple outdoor gigs and a couple indoor gigs, but it was socially distanced. But it was wonderful to be back out playing.
Yes, sir. I bet it was. Well, you have been immersed in the bluegrass world for quite a while. Maybe for the folks that are catching us for the first time and maybe don't know exactly who you are, bring us up to speed. How did all of this start for you in the bluegrass music? Teenager?
Yeah, I started loving music in general. I always have. I can hardly remember it, but my mom, I can remember a little bit about it. But, you know, my mom had bought me Buck Owens off when I was a kid. Mm. And my mom had bought me a little red guitar that was kind of like the one Buck had. And I just couldn't chord it or anything. You know, I didn't know anything about it. But I would sit out there and play, sing songs for the neighbor's kids. You know, I had all the kids to come over, and then I was like 2 or 3 years old.
Yeah.
And I'd get them steps. And back then, we didn't have big porch. We just had the cement box for steps. You know, I'd sit on the steps, and my mom would make everybody Kool-Aid, and I'd entertain them. So that started at a young age. And then, you know, you got your sports and stuff that come up through school, and you get into all that. And then by the time I was about 12, when I was 11, I started really loving singing in church. You know, I started leading songs in church. And then me and my cousin, Lowell Davis, we started singing together as a duet and went all over this area, you know, this little tri-state area where I live in North Georgia Mountains, and sang. And I started learning how to play mandolin. Probably about 14, something like that. And same with the banjo. I started the banjo maybe a little bit before that and just fell in love with it. So I've been doing this for a long, long time, and then started playing professionally in 93. I went with a group called Third Time Out.
Yeah.
And stayed with them a little less than a year. Then I went to work with Doyle Austin at Quicksilver.
Okay, yeah. So you got to play with some of the big names then.
Some of my heroes, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good experience, and then we started Mountain Hearts, the group Mountain Heart. Steve Gully, Jim Van Cleve, and myself. We started that group in 99. I left Doyle, and the last show was in December of 98. And we started in February of 99 working shows with Mountain Heart. And I had that band until 2015, and then stayed out for 2 or 3 years and started this band in 2019. So.
And the band that you are presently with is the Appalachian Road Show, right?
Appalachian Road Show, yes, yeah, sir. It depends on where you're at. Here it's Appalachian, and where you're at is Appalachian.
Appalachian. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's one of those words.
Yeah.
The Appalachian Road Show, and which is, and we had a chance to talk about that. Folks can dial back through our shows and probably find that one. Maybe 2 years ago, you guys have been together for since about 2018. Is that right?
Well, we recorded the record in 2018 in the summer of 2018. We released it, IBMA, which would have been in October. I think we didn't have it released yet. I think the 26th or 28th of October of 2018. And we started taking dates in, at the first of the year. We started taking dates and actually formed the band at the first year. But we recorded the album in 2018, and then we decided to make a go of it in 2019.
And you guys have a little bit different approach to the music than kind of the traditional bluegrass act that has some originals and doing some covers. You guys have a little bit of a theme to what you're doing, right?
Yeah, it's a theme. We want it to look and feel and sound. You know, we don't want to sound like we're, you know, our banjos are in the 1920s, and you know, we don't want to be, nothing wrong with somebody not being in tune, but we want to have our instruments in tune, and we want to be in time and in the pocket. You know, with that type of, we want our skills to be expert if we can, if possible.
Yeah.
But we want to capture the spirit. We want to capture the spirit of the music of the Appalachian Mountain people and how the music came over, even from the beginning, the stuff that came over from Scotland, Ireland, England, West Africa, and the things that came over, and how those sounds all melded together through time to form what we have now, you know, which, you know, Appalachian folk music, bluegrass music, whatever you call it, you know, all those things kind of derived from the fact that people were settling in this country, and the first place really that kind of was a stopping point for them was the Appalachian Mountains, you know. It wasn't as easy to get over the Appalachian Mountains as it was to come off the beach, you know, somewhere out
right.
somewhere in the city. So I think those things, you know, that's kind of how things got started, and we want to capture the spirit of that. And of course, you know, I live in the North Georgia Mountains. My grandparents, great grandparents, were all sawmillers and loggers, and you know, we sing songs about different industries and different anything Appalachian. Basically, we're trying to cover it. Some songs are new. Jim writes a lot of songs. Darryl writes songs. Some things are new. Some things we pull up old stuff and do. It just but we're trying to cover the gamut of the Appalachian people and their culture. And during our show, you know, we talk about it, but we don't just sit and talk. We actually, there's music involved, you know. We might tell a quick story, and the music behind, you know, Jimmy will stand behind me with a fiddle, and Darryl will have his octave mandolin or something. They'll play a little tune. A lot of times they just riff. They don't even have anything planned. They just riff, and whatever comes out. But it sets the mood for what I might be saying. And the same with Darryl. Darryl does something. Zeb plays the guitar, and he kind of sets the mood. I think what he does right now is that he's been playing a little bit of the old-timey sound in the version of Shady Grove.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Playing it slow.
Yeah.
In a minor key.
That's
the mood for Darryl's story.
Yeah.
So just that type of stuff is the way the show goes. And it starts with the industries, and it goes down through, you know, how they worshipped in the churches and you know, how people live their lives and what they did for a living and what they did on their spare time and the songs that they sang and played. You know, we just kind of covered to run the gamut of all that.
Yeah.
It's fun. A lot of fun.
Well, we certainly want to want people to go out and check that out as soon as you guys can get back out on the road. But one of the reasons we're getting together today is that you actually have it's not really a solo record, but you've got a lot of help, but it's a personal project that you're putting together and releasing in the midst of all of this slowdown, and it's kind of in addition to what you're doing with the Appalachian Roadshow. Tell us about your new album.
Well, I will, and the funny thing about it is this was the precursor to Appalachian Roadshow. When I left Mountain Heart, in 15, I mean, Jim Van Cleve and myself stayed in real close contact. We talked every day, and still do. Now we're business partners again, you know. But anyway, we talked, and I had the neck surgery. I was having trouble playing the banjo, and I still do. I have trouble, but it's got some better. But I had three herniated discs in my neck, and I had neck fusion. And so the doctor told me, he said, do you sing as well? And I said, well, yeah, but I just never have really been a lead singer, you know, but I do sing. I mean, I've been part of my living. He said, well, there's a possibility that, you know, we hit a nerve or we cut something. I mean, it's happened. And he said, so I want you to know the risk of having this surgery is that we had something, you might lose your voice, you know, your singing voice. So I started getting worried, and I started sitting down with songs that I like, and this concept that I had about Appalachian Roadshow that I was pushing out in the future. You know, I talked to several people about it and gauged some interest from some other players and seeing if anybody might be interested in doing it with me. And, of course, everybody was really busy at the time, you know, so I kind of had put it off. But these songs that I had laid up in my mind, I started singing. I started getting my guitar out, going in a room and locking myself in a room and turning my phone on and just recording them on voice recorder. And all these songs on this record, that's where they came from. The stuff that I liked. I might have heard my grandpa sing or heard somebody sing when I was young, and most of them. You know, there's a few that I pulled a couple of Buddy Miller songs and a few different things I pulled out that, you know, that maybe wasn't something I grew up with, but I loved to sing them, and it was stuff that was me. So I got thinking, and Jim and myself got talking. I got sending him some of the stuff. I would email him a song, and he'd say, man, that is so cool. And it's so cool for the concept that you're talking about doing.
Yeah.
He said, you know what? He said, right now you're in a holding pattern. He said, you should just cut a record. So this was 2000, probably 15 or 16 when did this, probably not. There's somewhere around that range. But I guess it's been 4 years, so probably 16, maybe late 16, something like that. Anyway, he said, you should cut a record. So we just went in the studio. We called Sam Douglas, Brian Sutton. I wasn't playing banjo at the time, so we got Ron Stewart to come in and play banjo on it. Jason Moore, who's bass player for Mountain Heart, Jim Van Cleve, and Rob Ike. So that was the band. And then we had Doyle Lawson come in and join the band on a cut. And did mandolin and sang with me on a song that I grew up listening to, and I knew it was in Doyle's style of music. So he sang tenor on that song with me. So it was a blast. Then we had guests. We had Vince Gill. Vince did two songs with me. Dan Tominski did a song. Sean Lane of Blue Highway fame, he did two songs with me. My former partner Steve Gully, who just passed away back in August.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew that or not.
I did. Yeah.
Steve, He did about four songs with me, just parts there. And Rhonda Vincent did a song with me. And so, I mean, we've got an all-star cast. But now I did all the lead singing. I tried to make it a little more of a solo as far as singing goes because I've never featured myself on anything. Even the bands that I was owner of, I didn't really feature myself. I always had a featured singer, and I played the banjo for the most part. But this particular record I sang, I just had these folks sing harmony with me. And we didn't give them lead lines. They just sang harmony with me. And it was a dream come true, but that's been that many years ago. During that time, we formed Appalachian Roadshow while this project was in the mixing stage. Well, when we got the record deal with Billy Blue, I didn't want to hold off on Appalachian Roadshow, so I said, well, let's just put this in the can. Let's just set it back, and we'll cut a couple of records with Appalachian Roadshow, and when the name gets out, then we'll drop this in between a couple of records. And so that's what we did. The record's actually about 4 years old.
Okay.
Actually about 4 years old now. So, but that said, we're releasing it in February. So.
Okay. And you've already got at least one single out, right?
Yeah, we got Birmingham Jail out as a single, and we released it about 2 weeks ago, and Jerry Sally, the head of the label, called and said, he said, man, we got 20,600 DSP spins. He said, that's the most we've ever had on a single with Billy Blue so far. And I was thinking, is this song even out?
Wow.
I was like, is this song even getting played? And the next thing you know, he sends me one, said it got played 20,600 times this week, which is great. You know, so
yeah.
I'm expecting a big check off of that.
That's right. We're going to pause for just a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the interview. Now, will you guys try to incorporate some of these songs into the Appalachian Roadshow performance when you guys get back out?
Yeah, we actually do a couple now. We do Lost John, my version of Lost John. We close the show with it. But yeah, for the most part, we're going to keep, you know, we'll do some of them, but I don't want to oversaturate, you know, the band and the brand of the band, you know, with my solo stuff. And we kind of discourage cutting solo projects, you know, within the band because, it you know, sometimes it's conflict of interest.
Sure.
But the bottom line is I had thousands and thousands of dollars in this, you know, so
right.
I wanted to make sure that I could at least make my money back. So it's probably the only one I'll ever cut, you know, that's a solo type deal. But everybody seemed to be fine with it. But, yeah, we do a couple of songs now, you know, and probably we'll do, you know, we might replace them with a couple others and just kind of keep it fresh.
Sure, yeah, yeah. So, do you guys have anything new in the works with the Appalachian Roadshow band?
Well, we're not in the studio right now, but we're in the early stages. We've got a short list of songs to pick from, probably 20, 25 songs that we like. Jim is, you know, constantly writing instrumentals and different things, and we have a few writing sessions lined up with some people right now to kind of write towards our next theme. And you know, it's just, you know, it's hard. You got to keep yourself fresh. You almost have to reinvent yourself every time out because, you know, you don't want to be a carbon copy of yourself every time you cut a record.
Right.
You know, I enjoy themed records. I like stuff that has a theme and as long as it flows good, you know, I like stuff that has a theme to it. So that's a thrill for me, you know, to kind of come up with stuff and find material that fits the narrative that we're talking about at the time. You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it feels like, you know, you mentioned the word reinvent. It kind of feels like we're at a NASCAR race under a caution flag. You know, everybody's backed up at the behind the pace car waiting for somebody to roll the green flag and get back out there. What does it look like for you guys when you get to do that? Do you have dates lined up that you're hoping you're going to be able to meet?
Yeah, we have a good bit of dates. I think I had 47 at the first of the year, and it actually I had them canceled down to about 32.
Wow! And
now I'm back up in the 40s again.
Okay.
So I'm hoping. You know, I'd love to end up with 50. I'd be pretty thrilled with 50 dates by the time it's all over. You know, if things can come back, like right now, my February March dates all got canceled. My April dates. It's funny, I lost as many April dates as I gained, but I lost three and I've gained three.
Okay.
It's weird. So instead of having six, I've got three, but at the first year I just had three. But then there's some outdoor venues that decided they were gonna move forward. And you know, we got it worked out. So we've got three in April and we've got three or so in May.
Yeah.
And we lost our fifth. We were going to Ireland in May.
Wow.
And we were also going to England in May. So we were supposed to do England 1 week. Come back for a week and then go to Ireland, and then we had a tentative in the Czech Republic also. Either one of those trips is going to be a bounce over from England or Ireland over to Czech Republic and do a couple of shows. So we were looking forward to all that, and of course that's off the table now, probably 2022 before we get to do those. But
then
by the end of May it ramps up. June is full. July is nasty. You know, it's so. August is slam full, and September's completely full. October's probably three-quarters full, and then we've got a couple in November and I think one in December. So it's, you know, it just depends on this virus, you know, what happens.
Yeah, I know. It's so frustrating, for sure, and I know we'll all be glad when it's over.
yeah, I will be.
I wanted to mention, I caught a video clip earlier this morning, I guess. I was going to ask when I was working on my notes here what you do to keep yourself busy in this downtime, but you guys actually took kind of an interesting twist on that and adopted a couple children. I saw the Today Show clip, and I just, man, that was so neat. And if you don't mind, just tell us a little piece of that, because that is such a cool story.
Well, the story is the story. There's it's almost like you can't tell a piece of it without giving God all the credit for it.
Absolutely.
So I can condense it as much as possible, but the bottom line was, my wife and I, we have our children raised. I mean, my youngest daughter is a junior in high school. My mm-hmm. oldest daughter has been graduated for a couple of years. And my oldest daughter worked at a daycare. And it was it's a daycare that mostly they take in a lot of foster kids and people that are, you know, that come in, and families that are bringing in foster kids. It seems like they have a lot of those. Well, my daughter comes in brokenhearted about once a week. I mean, there's a sad case of children, and, you know, and she's one of them that'll bring home dogs and cats, and she rescues everything, you know. But me and my wife have never crossed our mind to adopt or foster or start over or anything. Never even crossed our minds. And the story in a nutshell, my daughter came home a couple of weeks before this happened and told us about these kids, and she said, "Dad, you've got to see this little boy especially." She said, "Both of them are darling, but you've got to see this little boy. He's got a hand that's just like yours." And for people that don't know, I play banjo and some guitar and stuff, but I don't have any fingers on my left hand. I just have a thumb and just a... My buddies call it the nub. They call it the nub. I've got the nub of a finger for a first time. You know. And so anyway, I said, "Well, that's something. I said, I'd like to see him sometime." You know, she said, "I wish we could help them, Daddy. It's so pitiful. They come from a drug bust, and they've been moved 8 times in 9 months.
Oh, my.
And we were the ninth in 10 months. So we ended up taking them. We were the ninth placement in 10 months. Mm. They've been moved basically once a month, you know. And anyway, they were going through a rough time, and then they were so hard to handle at the time. But anyway, to try to shorten it up as much as possible, 2 weeks went by. I was on my way to leave to go on the road to play with the Appalachian Road Show. We just got the band started again. And anyway, I was headed out on the road, and I was taking my youngest daughter to my mom's, and I got about 2 miles from the daycare center. And it literally, I'm not joking, it felt like God just got in the car with me. It was so heavy.
Mm.
And I looked at my daughter and I said, "I'm going to run by and see those kids." And she said, "Daddy, I knew you were going to do that." And I said, "You didn't know that." And she said, I could just tell. I knew you were."
Oh,
and she said, "I'm your baby, you know, I'm your baby." And I said, "Well, honey, I'm not taking in any kids." I said, "I just feel like we need to go by and see them." So we did. And when we went by to see them, the little boy, Tyler, he had saw me play banjo, and
okay.
neither child had ever known who their dad was.
Uh-huh.
Neither one of them had ever known a dad, so their mom, you know, they had separate dads, but neither one of them knew their dad, and so they had never had a man around or anything. So I walk in the room, and he sees me, and he jumps up out from the table he was at, and he runs, and he said, "Hey, look," he patted his little buddy on the head and said, "That's my dad." And he runs up and just said, "You're my dad." He jumps up and he climbs up my chest and kisses me in the face and says, "You my dad?" And I said, I didn't know what to say. I was speechless.
Yeah.
So long story, shorten as much as possible. I saw both of them. I left, told my wife I wouldn't see them. She had went by that morning. We had not had a discussion about it. She felt the same way that morning. She said, "I just felt like I need to go see them." And so I called her when I got to Dalton, Georgia. I was about 45 minutes from the house. I called her and told her that I'd stopped by. And she said, "What are you thinking?" She said, "I stopped by too." I said, "I'm not thinking anything." She said, "Well, do you feel like we need to help them?" And I said, "I feel something, but I'm not going to say." I said, "I'm just not going to say."
Yeah.
I said, "There's no way. I'm 50. I can't do it, you know."
Yeah.
And I just got in a serious, almost argument with God, because I knew what he was doing. I knew he was putting on me to take these kids.
Oh, my.
And the reason behind God's ways of doing things, when it all came down to it, 2 days later, the parents that had these kids decided that they couldn't handle them, and they returned them back into the state. Well, the state called the daycare center that Friday. I left on Wednesday evening. So on Friday morning, the state called and said, "We'll be picking those kids up today. The parents are not going to take them back, and we're going to have to take them to a group home," which is an orphanage. You know,
mm-hmm.
when you get to an orphanage, you're basically going to be split up and give up on. You know, mm-hmm. they tried for a year and a half, and they can't get them in anywhere, so they gave up on them. So God knew that, and he knew that somehow the man with the least patience in the world, he's going to teach some patience to. that's pretty much what happened. We had them, we picked them up on Friday, my wife did, and we had some friends that worked with the DFACTS here in LJ, and they said that since my daughter worked with them, they could call it fictive kin, if that makes sense to you. Fictive kin means you're same as kin since you work with them.
Yeah.
You're almost like a teacher to them.
Uh-huh.
So we got to take them home, and they've been here ever since.
Oh, my. Wow.
They didn't take them but home, so we adopted in May, this past May.
Wow.
We adopted them, and they're little Abernathys now.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, imagine the blessing of you being off the road and being able to really pour into that, you know, and with all the extra time that you've got, just adds to the story.
It's really strange thing. I feel like, I ain't saying it's not hard, because it is hard. Raising them's hard. Financially, it's hard. Everything, it's hard. But I say this, I feel like the woman with the barrel of meal and the cruise of oil. I thought when we took these kids in, I mean, I literally told God out loud in a screaming voice, I can't do this. I don't make enough money to make my house pay, but you can't do this to me.
Yeah.
God, you can put this burden on me. And then finally I gave in. I said, well, you're going to have to make a way. And it's been unbelievable. I have survived through all this pandemic. You know, we haven't traveled, so we don't spend as much money.
Right.
The banks have been lenient with house payments, and they don't count against you. If you need them to move one back, they'll move it back to the back end, and they've worked with us. And honestly, I've made it just about as good as I did, or better than I was when I was working all the time. You know,
Been
strange.
Wow.
How God works, you know.
Yeah.
You tell him to make a way, and then he shows off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you telling that story. I wanted to capture that. I saw that Today episode video, and I thought, you know, man, we got to finish up with that story, because I just.
That's awesome. Yeah, well, I'm glad you did. I don't mind telling it a bit. I don't mind especially, you know, bragging on somebody that's worth bragging on besides me, because I'm not worth a ton of it. I'm glad that God takes care of little children, you know, and sends people to help each other.
Yeah.
We're all in this world to help each other.
That's right. That's right. Well, thank you, Barry. The record is Barry Abernathy and Friends. I'm guessing they can go to the Appalachian Roadshow website?
Yeah, it'll be released February the 26th, and they can go to the Appalachian Roadshow website and get it. They can reach out to me via Facebook or social media. My number and everything's on the Appalachian Roadshow website as well. And so it shouldn't be any problem to get it. And hopefully it'll be in stores, you know, in some store for the Carry Bluegrass. Bluegrass and old time music, you'll be able to find it.
Yeah, good. Well, I certainly wish you well with it, Barry. Thank you. And I'm sure we'll get a chance to cross paths out there in the bluegrass world somewhere. And I'm looking forward to that, too. And wish you guys the best.
It's always a pleasure, Greg. We really appreciate what you've done to help the music out in general, but especially us.
Thank you, Barry. Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.